They went out through the press of courtiers, breaking free and crossing to where an inlaid marble star, some 10 feet across, marked the middle of the throne room floor. They faced each other, bowed, and drew steel. Makin bore the longsword father gave him when he took captaincy of the palace guard. A good weapon, Indian steel, woven dark and light, acid-etched, with old runes of power. Our time on the road had left its history recorded in notches along the blade. I'd never seen a better swordsman than Makin. I didn't want to see one here. Sir Galen made no move. He held his longsword ready, but in a lazy grip. I could see no marking on the weapon. A simple blade, forged from the black iron of the Turkmen. Never trust a Turkmen sword. I spoke in a whisper. For Turkmen iron sucks up spells like a sponge and holds a bitter edge. Sages finished the old line for me. I had a sharp reply for the heathen, but the clash of words rang out over it. Makin advanced on the Teuton, feinting low, then swinging high. Makin had an elemental way with a sword. The blade was part of him, a living thing from tip to hilt. In a wild fight, he knew where every danger lay, and where his cover waited. Sir Galen blocked and delivered a sharp riposte. Their swords flickered, and the play of metal rang out high and sharp. I could barely follow the exchange. Galen fought with technical precision. He fought like a man who rose at dawn every day to train and duel. He fought like a man who expected to win. 100 narrow escapes from death counted out the first minute of their duel. I found my right hand gripping the trunk of the glass tree, the crystal slick and cool under my fingers. By the end of that first minute, I could tell Galen would win. This was his game. Makin had his brilliance, but, like me, he fought in real fights. He fought in the mud. He fought through burning villages. He used the battlefield. But this dry little game, so narrow in its scope, this was all Galen lived for. Makin swung at Galen's legs, a touch too tight in the curve, and Galen made him pay. The tip of the Turkmen blade sketched a red line across Makin's forehead. A quarter of an inch more reach in Galen's arm, and the blow would have shattered Makin's skull.
So, you open your game by sacrificing your knight, Prince Jorg.
Sages spoke close to my ear. I startled. I'd forgotten about the man. My gaze wandered to the green canopy above us. I have no problems with sacrifice, heathen. The tree trunk slipped glassy smooth under my fingers as my left hand moved up along the trunk. The clash of swords punctuated our conversation. But I sacrifice only when there is something to be gained. The tree was heavier than I had imagined, and for a moment I didn't think I could topple it. I braced my legs and put my shoulder to the task. The thing fell without a sound, then exploded into a million pieces against the steps. I could have blinded half of Ankrath's aristocracy had their eyes been on the throne rather than the fight before them. As it was, I peppered their backs with shards of glass. The costumed throng at the base of the royal dais turned into a screaming mass. Noble-born women ran their hands through hair confined by diamond tiaras and brought them out sliced and bloody. Lords in thread of gold slippers, coiled in the latest fashions, hopped howling on a carpet of broken glass. Sir Makin and Sir Galen lowered their swords and watched in amazement. When Father stood, everyone fell silent, cuts or no cuts. Everyone except me. He opened his mouth to speak, and I spoke first. The lessons Makin learned on the road did not include tawny games. Wars are not won with jousting or chivalry. The lessons Makin learned are the same lessons I learned. Unfortunately, Sir Makin would rather die than offend his king by demonstrating them. I didn't raise my voice. That kept them quiet. Father, I turned to face him direct. I'll show you what I've learned. I'll fight your pet Teuton. If a man of my little experience can defeat your champion, then you should be happy to reinstate Sir Makin, nay? I fell back into roadspeak, hoping to stir his anger.
You're not a man, boy, and your challenge is an insult to Sir Galen, not worthy of consideration.
He spoke through clenched teeth. I'd never seen him so angry. In fact, I'd never seen him angry. An insult, maybe. I felt a smile bubbling up and let it show. But I am a man. I came of age 3 days ago, Father. I'm fit for marriage now, a valuable commodity, and I claim this fight as my year gift. Or would you turn your back on 3 centuries of Ancrath tradition and deny me my coming-of-age boon? The veins in his neck stood proud, and his hands flexed as if hungry for a sword. I didn't think it safe to count on his goodwill. If I die, the succession will be clear, I said. Your scorn whore will give you a new son, and you'll be rid of me. Gone for good. Like Mother and William. And you won't have to send dear old Father Gomst trawling the mire to prove it. I took a moment to bow toward the Queen. No offence, Your Majesty.
Galen! Father's voice was a roar. Kill this devil, for he's no son of mine!
I ran then, crunching emerald leaves under hard leather. Sir Galen charged from the center star, trailing his black sword behind him, shouting for my blood. He came fast enough. But the fight with Makin had taken some of his wind. I knocked an old woman from my path. She went down spitting teeth, pearls spilling from her broken necklace. I won free of the courtiers and kept on running, angled away from Galen. He'd given up the shouting, but I could hear him behind me, the thud of his boots and the rasp of his breath. He must have been a hand above 6 foot, but lighter armor and fresher wind made up for my shorter legs. As we ran, I pulled out my sword. There were charms enough in its edge to put a notch in that Turkman blade. I threw it away. I didn't need the weight. Little space remained to me. The left wall loomed just yards ahead. Galen, moments behind. I'd been aiming for one guardsman in particular. A younger fellow with fair sideburns and an open mouth. By the time he realized I wasn't veering away, it was too late. I hit him with the vambrace over my right forearm. The blow hammered his head back against the wall, and he slid down it with no further interest in the proceedings. I caught the crossbow in my left hand, turned, and shot Galen through the bridge of his nose. The bolt barely made it through his skull. It's one of the drawbacks in keeping them loaded. But still, it should have been tightened only hours before. In any event, most of the Teuton's brain left by the back of his head, and he fell down, very dead. The silence would have been utter, but for the whimpering of the old woman on the floor back by the dais. I looked back over the crowd of nobles, cut and bloody, at Galen lying with his arms flung out, at the sparkling ruins of the glass tree reaching toward the throne room doors.
Was the show to your liking, Father?
I asked.
I've heard that the court has been quiet in Sir Makin's absence.
And for the first time in my life, I heard my father laugh. A chuckle at first, then louder, then a howling gale, such that he had to hold his throne to stand.
Chapter 21.
Get out!
Father's laughing fit left him without warning. Snuffed like a candle, he spoke into the silence.
Get out! I'll talk to the boy now.
The boy, not my son. I didn't miss that edge. And they went, the high and the mighty, the lords and the ladies, the guards helping the injured, two of them dragging Galen's corpse. Makin followed after Galen, crunch, crunch, crunch across the broken glass, as if to make sure no life remained in him. Catherine let herself be led by a table knight. She stopped, though, at the base of the dais, and gave me a look as if she'd just that moment seen me for what I was. I sketched her a mocking bow, a reflex, like reaching for a blade. It hurt to see the hatred on her face, pure and astonished. But sometimes a bit of pain's just what we need. To cauterize the wound, burn out the infection. She saw me, and I saw her. Both of us stripped of pretense in that empty moment. Newlyweds, naked for their conjugals. I saw her for the same weakness I'd recognized when first we rode back into the green fields of Ancrath. That soft seduction of need and want, an equation of dependence that eases under the skin, so slow and sweet, only to lay a man open at the very time he most needs his strength. Oh, it hurt right enough. But I finished my bow and watched her back as they led her out. The queen went too, flanked by knights right and left, slightly awkward down the steps, a hint of a waddle. I could see the swell of her belly now as she walked. My half-brother, if Sagus's prediction held true. Heir to the throne should I die. Just a swelling now, just a hint. But sometimes that's all it takes. I recalled Brother Cain from the road, cut on the bicep when we took the village of Holt. "'Tain't nothing, little Jorgie," he'd said, when I offered to heat a knife. "Some farm boy with a rusty hoe. Don't go deep." "It's swelling," I told him. "Needs hot iron." "If it's not too late already." "Fuck that. Not for some farm boy with a hoe," Cain said. He died hard, did Cain. 3 days later, and his arm lay as thick as my waist, weeping pus greener than snot, and with a stench so bad, we left him screaming to die alone. It don't go deep. But sometimes the shallow cut bites to the bone, if you don't deal with it hard and fast. Just a swelling. I watched the queen go. Sagus stayed. His eyes kept returning to the shattered ruin of the tree. You'd have thought he'd lost his lover.
"Pagan, see to the queen," Father said. "She may need calming."
A dismissal, plain and simple. But Sagus was too distracted to see it. He looked up from the glittering remains of the trunk I'd toppled.
"Sire, I..."
"You what, heathen? You want something? It's not your place to want."
"I..."
This was new to Sagus. I could see that. He was used to control.
"You should not be left unattended, sire. The boy?
Say it, man. Spit it out."
"It may not be safe."
Wrong thing to say. I guess the heathen had relied on his magics too long. If he'd truly learned my father's mind, he'd know better than to suggest he needed protection from me.
"Out!"
Whatever else I might think of my dear father, I always did admire his way with words. The look Sagus gave me held more than hate. Where Catherine channeled a pure emotion, the tattooed magician offered bewildering complexity. Oh, there was hate there, sure enough. But admiration, too. Respect, maybe, and other flavors. All mixed in those mild brown eyes.
"Sire,"
he bowed, and started toward the doors. We watched him in silence, watched him pace across the sparkling carpet of debris, spotted here with a discarded fan, there with a powdered wig. The doors closed behind him with a dull clang of bronze on bronze. A scar on the wall behind the throne caught my attention. I threw a hammer once, hard, and missed my target. It hit there. It seemed to be a day for old scars. Old feelings.
"I want Gelith,"
Father said. I had to admire his ability to wrong-foot me. I stood there armed with accusations, burdened with all my yesterdays, and he'd turned away from me to the future. "Geleth hinges on the castle red," I said. It was a test. That was just how we spoke. Every conversation a game of poker. Every line a bet or a raise, a bluff or a call.
"Party tricks are well and good. You killed the Teuton. I didn't think you had it in you. You scandalized my court. Well, we both know what they are and what they're worth. But can you do it when it counts? Can you give me Geleth?"
I met his stare. I didn't inherit his blue eyes. I followed Mother in that department. There was a whole winter in those eyes of his, and nothing else. Even in Sagus's placid gaze, I could dig deeper and find a subtext. But Father's eyes held nothing but a cold season. I think that was where the fear lay, in the lack of curiosity. I've seen malice many a time, and hate in all its colours. I've seen the gleam in the torturer's eyes, the sick light. But even there was the comfort of interest, the slightest touch of salvation in shared humanity. He might have the hot irons, but at least he was curious. At least he cared how much it hurt.
"I can give you Geleth," I said. "Could I? Probably not. Of all Ankrath's neighbours, Geleth stood unassailable above the rest. The Lord of Geleth probably had better claim to the Empire throne than Father did. In the Hundred, Merle Gelethar had few equals." I found my hand on the hilt of my dagger. I itched to draw the tempered steel, to lay it across his neck, to scream at him, to bring some heat into those cold eyes. "You traded my mother's death away, you bastard! Your own son's blood, sweet William dead and barely cold, and you traded them away, a pax, for the rights to river trade."
"I'll need an army," I said. "Castle Red won't fall easy."
"You'll have the Forest Watch."
Father spread his hands over his throne's armrests and leaned back, watching.
200 men.
I felt my fingers tighten on the pommel of my knife. 200 men against the Castle Red. 10,000 might not be enough.
"I'll take my brothers too," I said.
I watched his eyes. No flicker in the winter, no start at brother. The weakness in me wanted to speak of Will.
"You'll have Geleth. I will give you the Castle Red. I'll give you the head of the Lord Gelethar. Then, you'll give the heathen to me. And you'll call me son."
Chapter 22. So we sat, Makin and I, at a table in the Falling Angel Tavern, with a jug of ale between us, and the song of a cracked-voiced bard struggling to be heard against the din. Around us, the brothers mixed with the lowest of the low town. Gaming, whoring, and gorging. Reich sat close at hand, his face buried in a roast chicken. He appeared to be attempting to inhale it.
"Have you ever seen a Castle Red, Jorg?"
Makin asked.
"No."
Makin looked at his ale. He hadn't touched it. For a few moments, we listened to the sound of Reich crunching chicken bones.
"Have you?" I asked.
He nodded slowly and leaned back in his chair, eyes on the lanterns above the street door. "When I was a squire to Sir Riley, we took a message to the Lord Gelethar. We stayed a week in the guest halls at the Castle Red before Merle Gelethar deigned to see us. His throne room puts your father's to shame." Brother Burlow staggered by, belly escaping over his sturdy belt, a haunch of meat in one hand and 2 flagons in the other, foaming over his knuckles. "What about the castle?" I could care less about a pissing contest over throne rooms. Makin toyed with his ale, but didn't drink.
"It's suicide, Jorg."
"That bad?"
"Worse," he said.
A painted whore backed into Makin's lap.
Where's your smile, my handsome?
She had good tits, full and high, pushed into an inviting sandwich in a bodice of lace and whalebone.
I'm sure I could find it.
Her hands vanished into the froth of her skirts, where they bunched around Makin's waist.
Sally will make it all good. My handsome knight doesn't need no boys to keep him warm.
She flicked a jealous glance my way. Makin pitched her to the floor. It's built into a mountain. What shows above the rock, a wall so high, it hurts your neck to look up at the battlements. Makin reached for his ale and fastened both hands around the flagon.
Ow!
The whore picked herself up from the wet boards and wiped her hands on her dress.
You didn't have to do that now.
Makin didn't spare her a glance. He turned his dark eyes on me. The doors are iron, thick as a sword is long, and what's above the ground isn't but a tenth part of it. There's provisions in those deep vaults to last years. Sally proved to be a true professional. She transferred her attentions to me, so smooth you'd think I'd been the object of her affection all along.
And who might you be now?
She came in close, running her fingers into my hair.
You're too pretty for that grumpy sellsword, she said. You're old enough to learn how it works with girls. And Sally will show you.
She had her mouth close to my ear now, sending tickles down my neck. I could smell her cheap lemongrass scent, cutting through the ale stink and the dreamweed on her breath. How many men would it take to bring the place down around Lord Gelathar's ears? I asked. Makin's eyes returned to the lanterns, and his knuckles went white around his flagon. Somewhere behind us, Wright gave a roar, quickly followed by the splintering sound of a body meeting a table at high speed. If you had 10,000 men, Makin said, raising his voice above the crashing sounds, 10,000 men, well supplied, and with siege machines, lots of siege engines, then you might have him in a year. That's if you could keep his allies off your back. With 3,000, you might starve him out eventually. I caught hold of Sally's hand as it slipped across my belly to the buckle of my belt. I twisted her wrist a little, and she came front and center sharpish, with a high-pitched gasp. She had green eyes, like Catherine's, but more narrow and not so clear. Under the paint, she had fewer years on me than I first thought. She might be 20, certainly no more. And what if I found us a way in? What then, Brother Makin? How many men to take the castle red if I opened us the door? I spoke to Sally's face, inches before mine. The garrison stands at 900, veterans mostly. He sends his fresh meat to the borders and takes it back when it's been seasoned. I heard Makin's chair scrape back. Which son of a whore threw that? He yelled. I kept the whore's wrist turned. I took her throat in my other hand and drew her closer. Tonight we'll call you Catherine, and you can show me how it works with girls. Some of the dream haze left her eyes, replaced by fear. That was all right with me. I had 200 men and no secret door into the castle red. It seemed only right that somebody should be worried. Chapter 23. My book shifted again. I say my book, but in truth, it was stolen. Filched from Father's library on the way out of the tall castle. The book lurched at me, threatening to snap shut on my nose. Lie still, damn you, I said. Sally gave a sleepy murmur and nestled her face in the pillow. I settled the book back between her buttocks and nudged her legs slightly further apart with my elbows. Over the top of the page, I could see the faint knobbed ridge of Sally's spine tracing its path across her smooth back, to be lost in the red curls around her neck. I wasn't convinced that the text before me was more interesting than what lay beneath it. It says here that there's a valley in Gelath they call the Gorge of Lucrota, I said. It's in the Badlands, down below the Castle Red. The morning light streamed through the open window. The air had a chill to it, but a good one, like the bite on ale. Sally's voice came from the pillow. I'd tired her out. You can wear even whores out when you're that young. The combination of a woman and time on my hands wasn't one I'd tried before. I found the mix to my liking. There's a lot to be said for not being in a queue, and not having to finish up before the flames take hold of the building. And the willingness. That was new too, albeit paid for. In the dark, I could imagine it was free. Now, if I know my ancient Greek, and I do, a Lucrota is a monster that speaks with a human voice to lure its prey. I bent my neck to bite at the back of her thigh. And in my experience, any monster that talks in a human voice is human. Or was. My feet hung over the end of the bed. I wiggled my toes. Sometimes that helps. I reached for the oldest of the three books I'd stolen. A builder text on plastique sheets, wrinkled by some ancient fire. Scholars in the East would pay 100 in gold for builder texts. But I hoped for more profit than that. I'd been taught the builder speech by Tutor Lundist. I learned it in a month, and he'd gone bragging to anyone who'd listen. Until Father shut his mouth with one of those dark looks he's famed for. Old Lundist said I knew the builder speech as well as any in the Broken Empire. But I couldn't make sense of more than half the words in the little book I'd stolen. I could read the top secret at the head and foot of every page. But neurotoxicology, carcinogen, mutagen. Maybe they were old styles of hat. To this day, I don't know. The words I did recognize were interesting enough, though. Weapons, stockpile, mass destruction. The last but one page even had a shiny map, all contours and elevations. Tutor Lundist taught me a little geography as well. Enough to match that small map to the views from Castle Red. Painstakingly executed in the large but dull A History of Geleth, whose leather-bound spine nestled in the cleft of dear Sally's oh-so-biteable backside. Even when I understood the builder words, the sentences didn't make sense. Binary weapon leakage is now endemic. The lighter-than-air unary compounds show little toxic effect, though roseosis is a common topological exposure symptom. Or, from the same page, mutagenic effects are common downstream of binary spills. I could stretch my Greek to guess the meaning, but it hardly seemed reasonable. Perhaps I'd stolen an old storybook.
Jorg!
Makin hollered through the door.
The escort's here to take you to the Forest Watch.
Sally started up at that, but I pressed her down.
Tell them to wait, I called.
The Forest Watch weren't going to be much use to me. Not unless they had 10,000 friends they wanted to come along.
Sweet cheat you. I'm sore.
Sally tried to get up again.
Oh, it's morning already. Samoth will kill me.
I said still, damn it. I found a coin from my purse on the table and tossed it up to her. That for your damn Samoth. She slumped back with a comfortable protest. Binary weapon leakage. As if speaking the words would add meaning.
You're going to Castle Red, then?
Sally said. She stifled a yawn. I raised a hand to slap her into silence. Of course, she didn't see it, and A History of Geleth blocked the best target.
Say hello to all those little red people for me, she said.
Roseosis. I lowered my hand to her hip. Little red people?
Uh-huh.
I felt her wiggle under my palm. I gripped harder. Little red people.
Yes.
A whine of irritation tinged her voice.
Why do you think they call it the Castle Red?
I pulled myself to a sitting position.
Makin! Get in here!
I shouted it loud enough for the whole inn to hear. He came in sharp enough, one hand on his sword. A smile found its way to his lips when he saw Sally sprawled out naked. But he kept his hand where it was.
My prince!
Sally really did try to get up at that. She almost made it to all fours, and her history went flying.
Prince! Nobody said nothing about a prince. He ain't no bleeding prince.
I pushed her down again. That conversation we had yesterday, Macon, I said.
Yes?
Anything you'd like to add to the description? Anything about those 900 veterans? I asked. For a moment, he looked as blank as Idiot Michael.
Something about the colour scheme? I gave him a prompt.
Oh, he grinned. The blushes. Yes. They're red as a cooked lobster, every one of them. Something in the water, they say. I thought everyone knew that.
Roseosis. I never knew it, I said.
Sounds like your father should have hanged Tutor Lundis then, Macon said. Everyone knows that.
Monsters down below.
He's never a prince,
Sally sounded outraged.
You've been royally fucked.
Macon gave her a little bow. Castle Red and all its red soldiers up above. I got off the bed. Weapons stockpile. Leakage.
So, Macon said, are we ready to go?
I reached for my trews. Sally rolled over as I laced them up, which didn't help at all. I watched her nakedness. Highlights courtesy of the morning sun. I wondered, should I gamble the Forest Watch and the brothers both on some wild conjectures and blind guesses of what obscure words meant?
Tell them an hour.
My fingers flipped from lacing to unlacing. I'll be ready in an hour. Sally lay back on the pillows and smiled.
Prince, eh?
Lying in seemed like a good idea all of a sudden. Chapter 24.
What ho, Captain Coddin?
I came down the stairs in remarkably good spirits shortly before noon. The captain gave me a stiff bow, his lips pressed into a tight line. In a far corner, the younger brothers, Rodat, Job and Sim, nursed hangovers. I could see Burlow under a table, snoring.
I'd have thought you'd be back at Chelney Fort, Captain, protecting our borders from the predations of villains and rogues,
I said, all cheery-like.
There was some dissatisfaction with my performance in the role. Certain voices at court maintained that I'd let a sight too many villains and rogues past my garrison of late. I'm assigned to escort duty in Krath City.
He gestured to the street door.
If Prince Jorg is ready.
I decided I liked the man. That surprised me. I'm not given to liking people as a rule. I blamed it on my mood. Nothing like a night of whoring to turn a man soft. So Coddin and his four soldiers led us out through the west gate. I had Macon with me, of course, and Elban, because old though he was, there weren't many among the brothers with more than half a brain. I brought the Nuban along too, not sure why, but he'd been sat by the bar eating an apple, with that crossbow of his across his lap, and I thought I'd have him along. We took the old road toward Rennet Forest, 12 miles or so as the crow flies, and of course, the old road flies like a crow, following the line laid down by men of Rome an age upon an age ago. Coddin rode at the fore, flanked by his boys, us behind enjoying the day. Macon nudged Firejump up alongside Jared, and the two of them exchanged whatever threats passed between stallions.
You should have left me to Sir Galen, Jorg, Macon said.
You think you could have taken him? I asked.
No. He knew his sword work, that Teuton,
Macon said, and he wiped a hand across his mouth.
I've never crossed blades with a better man.
He wasn't the better man, I said. A silence fell between us for a moment. Elban broke it.
Macon found a man he couldn't beat? The Macon? I don't believe it,
His lisp made a wet thur of sir. Makin turned in the saddle to face Elban.
Believe it, the King's Champion had me cold.
Jorg beat him, though.
He nodded toward the Nuban. With a crossbow. You'd have been proud.
The Nuban ran a soot-black hand over the ironwork of his bow, touching the faces of his pagan gods.
There's no pride in this, Makin.
I could never read the Nuban. One moment he'd seem as simple as Michael, the next deeper than a deep well. Sometimes both at once.
Michael, I said, remembering. What happened to our pet idiot in the end? Did he die? I forgot to ask.
We left him in Norwood, Jorth. He should have been dead, with that gut wound. But he just hung on, moaning all the time,
Elban said. He wiped the spittle from his chin.
Too stupid to die, Makin said. He grinned.
We had to drag him off to a house at the edge of town. Little Reiki was all for finishing him off, just to shut him up.
We had us a chuckle over that.
Seriously, though, Jorg, you should have left Galen to it, Makin said. If you had, you'd be sitting pretty at court.
You're still heir to the throne. You'd have got that saucy princess in time.
The castle read as a death sentence for smashing that stupid tree. That and calling his wife a scorn whore. Your father is not a forgiving man.
You'd be right in all that, Makin, I said, if my ambition were limited to sitting pretty. I'd have let the Teuton do his worst.
Luckily for you, I want to win the Hundred War, reunite the Broken Empire, and be Emperor.
And if I'm going to stand any chance of that, then taking the Castle Red with 200 men will be a piece of cake.
We had our lunch at a milestone on the margins of the forest. Mutton swiped from the kitchens at the Falling Angel. We were still wiping the grease from our fingers when we rode in under the trees. Big oaks and beeches in the main, blushing crimson with the kiss of autumn frost. Riding under those branches with the crunch of hoof on leaves and the breath of horses pluming before us. I felt it again. That sweet hook sinking beneath the skin. They say a man can travel a lifetime and not escape the spell of the Ancrath Valleys. I yawned, cracking my jaw. It hadn't been a night for sleeping. Warm in my cloak, I let Jared's gentle gait rock me. I found myself thinking of smooth limbs and softness. My lips spoke her name, as if to taste it.
Catherine?
Makin asked. I jerked my head up to find him watching me, with an eyebrow raised in that irritating way of his. I looked away. To our left, a long sprawl of hookbriar writhed around the boles of three elms. I'd learned a hard lesson among the hookbriar one stormy night. It wasn't just the beauty of the land that had its hooks in me.
Kill her.
I turned round in the saddle, but Makin had fallen back to joke with the Nuban.
Kill her, and you'll be free forever.
It seemed that the voice came from the darkness beneath the briar's coils. It spoke under the crunching of hooves in the dry leaf fall.
Kill her.
An ancient voice, desiccated, untouched by mercy. For a moment I saw Catherine, blood welling over her white teeth, her eyes round with surprise. I could feel the knife in my hand, hilt against her stomach, hot blood running over my fingers.
Poison would be quieter, a distant touch.
That last voice, it could have been mine, or the briar. They started to sound the same. Strength requires sacrifice. All weakness carries its cost. Now that was me. We'd left the briar behind, and the day had grown cold. The forest watch found us quick enough. I'd have been worried if they hadn't. A six-man patrol, all in blacks and greens, came out of the trees and bade us state our business on the King's Road. I didn't let Codin introduce me.
I've come to see the watchmaster, I said.
The watchmen exchanged glances. I'm sure we seemed a ragged bunch, only Makin with any courtly touch about him, having polished up to see Father Dear. I had my old road plate on, and Elban and the Nuban, well, their looks would earn them a bandit's noose without the tedium of a trial.
Codin spoke up then.
This is Jorg, Prince of Ancrath,
heir to the throne. His words, hard to swallow as they might be, had the weight of a uniform behind them. The watchman looked dumbfounded.
He's come to see the watchmaster,
Coddin said, by way of a prompt. That got them moving, and they led us into the deep forest along a series of deer paths. We followed in single file, riding until I got tired of being slapped in the face by every other branch, and dismounted. The watchman kept up a stiff pace, showing little regard for royalty or heavy armour. "Who is the watchmaster anyhow?" I asked, short of breath and clanking along loud enough to keep the bears from hibernation. One of the watchmen glanced back, an old fellow, gnarled as the trees.
"Lord Vincent de Gren."
He spat into the bushes to show his regard for the man.
"Your father appointed him this spring," Captain Coddin said from behind me. "I gather it was a punishment of some sort."
The Forest Watch made its headquarters by Rullo's Fall, on the plain where the River Temus meandered before gathering its courage for the leap down a 200-foot step in the bedrock. A dozen large cabins, wood-shingled and log-built, nestled among the trees. An abandoned mill house served as the watchmaster's keep, fashioned from granite blocks and perched at the head of the fall. A few dozen watchmen came out to watch our column wind up to the keep. Not much entertainment in these parts, I guessed. The old watchman went in to announce us while we tied our steeds. He didn't hurry out, so we waited. A cold wind blew up, stirring the fallen leaves. The watchman stood with us, black-green cloaks flapping. Most of the watch held short bows. A longbow will get tangled in the trees, and you'll never need great range in the forest. No Robin of Hood here. The watchmen weren't merry. And they were apt to kill you if you stepped out of line.
Prince Jorg!
The keep door opened, and a man clad in ermine stepped out, his fingers hooked in a belt of gold plates.
Lord Vincent de Gren, I'm guessing.
I gave him my most insincere smile.
So you're here to tell us we're all going to die over some stupid promise a boy made to impress his father,
he said, loud enough for the whole clearing to hear. I had to hand it to Lord Vincent. He certainly cut straight to the chase. And I like that in a man, I really do. But I didn't like the way he said it. He had a screwed-up sort of face, did Lord Vincent, as if the world tasted sour in his mouth, which was odd, because he had the sort of butterball shape that takes some serious eating to acquire, and a few dozen extra stouts to cover in ermine. I took him to be about 30, but it's hard to tell with fat people. They've no skin spare for wrinkles.
News travels fast, I see.
I wondered if my father wanted me to fail even more than he wanted the castle red. In a way, it would be a compliment, implying he felt I had a chance. But no, this had a woman's touch. Maybe the touch of a woman still smarting over scorn whore. A woman used to teasing out post-coital secrets. A woman who might send riders to Renat Forest, even to Geleth. I strode across to the man.
I wonder, my Lord de Gren, would your men follow you to the death? I'm impressed that you've won their respect so rapidly. I hear that the Forest Watch are a hard lot, tougher than nails.
I put an arm around his shoulders. He didn't like it. But you can do things like that when you're a prince.
Walk with me.
I didn't give him a choice. I steered him downstream toward the glistening line where the River Temus vanished, replaced by a faint haze of mist.
Follow on, I shouted. This isn't a private meeting.
So we came to stand on a shelf of wet stone, 50 yards down from the millhouse, where the waters leapt white over the rocks, gathering for their plunge over Rullo's Fall.
Prince Jorg, I don't...
Lord Vincent began.
You come here.
I took my arm from de Gren and pointed to the old watchman who'd spat out the watchmaster's name earlier. I had to shout above the voice of the river. The old fellow came to join us by the edge.
And who's this proud example of the watch, watchmaster?
I asked. Fat people's faces are wonderful for emotion. Or at least, Lord Vincent's was. I could see his thoughts twitching across his brow,
quivering in his jowls, twisting in the rolls around his neck.
There's 200 of the buggers. You can't be expected to know them all, I said, all sympathy. What's your name, watchman?
Keppen, your highness, he said.
He looked as if he'd rather be somewhere else, had his eyes open, looking for the out.
Order him to jump, watchmaster, I said.
What?
Lord Vincent went very pale, very quickly.
Jump, I said. Order him to jump over the fall.
What?
Lord Vincent seemed to be having difficulty hearing over the roar. Keppen had his hand on his dagger hilt. Sensible fellow.
If your men are all going to die over some stupid promise a boy made his father, well, it's only sensible for the boy to make sure they'll follow your orders when it means certain death, I said. And if you say what again, I'm going to have to slice you open here and now.
What? But my prince, Prince Jorg.
He tried to laugh.
Order him to jump now, I barked it in de Gren's face.
Jump!
Not like that. Put some conviction into it. He's not going to jump if you make it a suggestion. Jump!
Lord Vincent reached for some lordly command.
Better, I said, once more, with feeling.
Jump!
Lord Vincent screamed the word at old Keppen. The colour came back now, flushing him bright crimson.
Jump! Jump, damn you!
Buggered if I will!
Keppen shouted back. He pulled his knife, a wicked bit of steel, and backed off, wary-like. I shrugged. Not good enough, Lord Vincent. Just not good enough at all. And with a hearty shove, he went over. Never a wail from him. Didn't even hear a splash. I moved quickly then. In two strides, I had Keppen by the throat, with my other hand on his wrist, keeping that knife at bay. I took him by surprise, and in another step, I had him backed out over the edge, heels resting on air, and my grip on his neck, all that kept him with us.
So, Keppen, I said, will you die for the new watchmaster?
I gave him a smile, but I don't think he noticed.
This is the bit where you say yes,
and you'd better mean it,
because there are a lot worse things than dying easy when given an order.
He got a yes out past my fingers.
Codin,
I pointed him out.
You're the new watchmaster.
I pulled Keppen back and walked back toward the keep. They all followed me.
If I ask you to die for me, I expect you to ask when and where, I said.
But I'm not in any hurry to ask. It'd be a waste. The Forest Watch is the most dangerous 200 soldiers Ankrath has, whether my father knows it or not. It wasn't all flattery. In the forest, they were the best we had. With a good watchmaster, they were the sharpest sword in the armory, and too clever to jump when told.
Watchmaster Codin here is taking you into Geleth.
I saw a few lips curl at that. Lord Vincent's long jump or not, I was still a boy, and the Castle Red was still suicide.
You'll get within 20 miles of the Castle Red and no closer. You're to spend 2 weeks in the Otten Forests, cutting wood for siege engines, and killing any patrols that come in after you. Watchmaster Codin will tell you the rest when the time comes.
I turned from them and pushed open the door to the keep. Codin, Makin. They followed me in. The entrance hall gave onto a homely dining room, where the table was set with cold goose, bread, and autumn apples. I took an apple.
My thanks, Prince Jorg.
Codin gave another of his stiff bows.
Saved from escort duty in Krath City, I can enjoy my winter running around the woods in Geleth now.
The faintest hint of a smile flickered at the corner of his mouth.
I'm coming with you. In disguise. It's a closely guarded secret
that you're to ensure leaks out, I said.
And where will we be, really?
Makin asked. The Gorge of Lucrota, I told him. Talking to monsters. Chapter 25. We returned to the tall castle, through the old town gate, with the noonday sun hot across our necks. I carried the family sword across my saddle, and none sought to bar our way. We left the horses in the west yard. "See, he's well shod. We have a road ahead of us." I slapped Gerard's ribs and let the stable lad lead him away. "We've company." Makin laid a hand upon my shoulder. "Have a care." He nodded across the yard. Sagus was descending the stair from the main keep, a small figure in white robes. "I'm sure our little pagan can learn to love Prince Georgie. Just like all the rest," I said. "He's a handy man to have in your pocket." Makin frowned. "Better to put a scorpion in your pocket. I've been asking around. That glass tree you felled the other day, it wasn't a trinket. He grew it. He'll forgive me." "He grew it from the stone, Jorg. From a green bead. It took 2 years. He watered it with blood." Behind us, Reich sniggered, a childish sound, unsettling from such a giant. "His blood," Makin finished. Another of the brothers snorted laughter at that. They'd all heard the story of Sir Galen and the glass tree. Sagus stopped a yard in front of me and cast his gaze across the brothers. Some still handing over their steeds, others pressed close at my side. His eyes flicked up to take in Reich's height.
"Why did you run, Jorg?"
he asked.
"Prince! You'll call him Prince, you pagan dog!" Makin stepped forward, half-drawing. Sagus took him in with a mild look, and Makin's hand fell limp at his side, the argument gone from him.
"Why did you run?"
"I don't run," I said.
"4 years ago, you ran from your father's house."
He kept his voice gentle, and the brothers watched him as though charmed by a spinning penny. "I left for a reason," I said. His line of attack unsettled me.
"What reason?"
"To kill someone."
"Did you kill him?" Sagus asked.
"I killed a lot of people."
"Did you kill him?"
"No."
The Count of Renar still lived and breathed.
"Why? Why hadn't I? Did you harm him? Did you hurt his interests?"
"I hadn't. In fact, if you looked at it, if you traced the random path of 4 years on the road, you might say I had furthered Renar's interests." The brothers and I had nipped at Baron Kennick's heels and kept him from his ambitions. In Mabaton, we had torn the heart from what might have been rebellion. "I killed his son. I stuck a knife in Marklos. Renar's flesh and air." Sagus allowed himself a small smile.
"As you came closer to home, you came under my protection, Jorg. The hand that steered you fell away."
Was it true? I couldn't see the lie in him. My eyes followed the scriptures written across his face, the complex scrolls of an alien tongue. An open book, but I couldn't read him.
"I can help you, Jorg. I can give you back yourself. I can give you your will."
He held out his hand, palm open. "Free will has to be taken," I said. When in doubt, reach for the wisdom of others. Nietzsche in this case. Some arguments require a knife, if you're to cut to the quick. Others require the breaking of heads with a philosopher's stone. I reached out and took his hand in mine, from below, his knuckles to my palm. "My choices have been my own, pagan," I said. "If someone sought to steer me, I would know it."
"Would you?"
"And if I knew it, oh, if I knew it, I would teach such a lesson in pain that the red men of the East themselves would come to learn new tricks." Even as they left me, the words rang hollow, childish.
It is not I who has led you, Jorg, Satis said.
Who then? I squeezed his hand until I heard the bones creak. He shrugged.
Ask for your will, and I shall give it to you.
If there were a glamour on me, I would find the one that placed it, and I would kill them. I felt an echo of the old pain that plagued me on the road, a pang from temple to temple, behind the eyes like a sliver of glass. But there is none, and my will is my own, I said. He shrugged again and turned away. Looking down, I saw that I had left my left hand in my right, and blood ran between my fingers.
Chapter 26. From my encounter with Sagius in the West Yard, I went straight to Mass. Meeting the pagan had left me wanting a touch of the Church of Roma, a breath of incense, and a heavy dose of dogma. If heathens held such powers, it seemed only right that the Church should have a little magic of its own to bestow upon the worthy, and hopefully upon the unworthy who bothered to show up. Failing that, I had a need of a priest in any case. We marched into the chapel to find Father Gomst presiding. The choir song faltered before the clatter of boots on polished marble. Nuns shrank into the shadows beneath the brothers' leers, and no doubt the rankness of our company. Gaines and Sim took off their helms and bowed their heads. Most of them just glanced around for something worth stealing. "Forgive the intrusion, Father." I set a hand in the font by the entrance and let the holy water lift the blood from my skin. It stung.
"Prince!"
He set his book upon the lectern and looked up, white-faced.
"These men! It's not proper!"
"Oh, shush!" I walked the aisle, eyes on the painted marvel of the ceiling, turning slowly as I went, one hand raised and open, dripping.
"Aren't they all sons of God? Penitent children? Returned for forgiveness?"
I stopped before the altar and glanced back toward the brothers by the door.
"Put that back, Rodat, or you'll be leaving both thumbs in the alms box."
Rodat drew a silver candlestick from the grey rot of his travel cloak.
"That one at the least."
Father Gomst pointed at the Nuban, a tremble in his finger.
"That one is not of God's flock." "Not even a black sheep?"
I came to stand by Gomst. He flinched.
"Well, maybe you can convert him on our journey."
"My prince?"
"You're to accompany me to Geleth, Father Gomst. A diplomatic mission. I'm surprised the king didn't tell you."
I wasn't so surprised in truth, since it was a lie.
"We leave immediately."
"But,
come."
I strode toward the door. A pause, and then he followed. I could hear the reluctance in his footsteps. The brothers began to file out ahead of me, Reich trailing his hand along the walls, over reliquary and icon. Having secured the priest, I was keen to be off. I directed Makin to oversee a swift provisioning and led Gomst back to the West Yard.
"We should not take this Nuberman on a mission of diplomacy, Prince, or any other,"
Gomps whispered as we walked.
"They drink the blood of Christian priests to work their spells, you know."
"They do?"
I think it was the first interesting thing I ever heard Gomps say.
"I could use a little magic myself."
The priest paled behind his beard.
"A superstition, my prince."
A few more paces and...
"Even so, were you to burn him, the Lord's blessing would be upon us and our journey."
Within the hour, saddlebags bulging, we rode back out into the old town. Sagius was waiting for us. He stood alone by the side of the cobbled path. I drew up before him, still uneasy in my mind. He had driven a wedge of doubt into me. I had told myself I'd set Count Renner aside as an act of strength, a sacrifice to the iron will I needed to win the Game of Thrones. But sometimes, now for instance, I didn't quite believe it.
"You should accept my protection, Prince,"
Sagus said. I've survived long enough without it.
But now...